Hi, I'm Marian McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Joe Bushkin. He's long distinguished himself as both a pianist and composer. While a member of the Tommy Dorsey Band in the 1940s, he wrote Frank Sinatra's first hit song, Oh, Look at Me Now. And he's written for Bing Crosby, Nat King Cole, Benny Goodman, Louis Armstrong, and many others. Joe Bushkin returns to piano jazz with his elegant, witty, and rhythmic style. And that's about it. Elegant, witty, rhythmic style.
Well, thank you for that lovely intro, Marian. I appreciate it. When you talked about Sinatra and the Dorsey Band many gang of years ago, I remember flying around in a Greyhound bus with Frank and the Pied Pipers and Bunny Berrigan, and we had some talented cats in that band.
I can't imagine you ever riding on a Greyhound bus, but I guess in those days, that's how the band traveled.
Of course, when I talk about the bus, I just know that we had a good time. It was the only way you could possibly tolerate doing one-nighters that were 400 miles apart.
Did Tommy go on the bus?
No, Tommy enjoyed being the band leader, and he went in his Lincoln Continental or whatever.
But you had such fantastic people in that band.
Oh, we had a bunch of great cats.
I mean, I didn't know Bunny Berrigan was in
the band. Oh, yeah, well, you know, Bunny was about the, next to myself, one of the worst businessmen you can imagine. And when he went busted out, he joined Tommy's band again. And I got a call from Bunny, because I was in Bunny's band before that happened. And he said that Tommy was looking for a piano player. You better get yourself out to Frank Daly's Meadowbrook and sit in a little bit. And as it turned out, Jimmy Blake, one of the trumpet players, was having a little problem with his chops. So I sat in and played third trumpet instead of auditioning on the piano, as it turned out. And then I got a call from Tommy and showed up ice cold at the Paramount Theater. And boy, if you missed that pit, you weren't in the band. They went up high above the audience.
Well, did you write that song then? I mean, Look at Me Now. Had you already written that for Frank?
Yeah, I had already been doing some writing with Johnny DeVries, my buddy. And when we were at the Astor Roof, I brought Oh, Look at Me Now in for the Pied Pipers. And people would ask for it, and Tommy wasn't there for the first set when the Pipers did it. And they'd ask for the tune, and Tommy said, we don't have it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that worked out fine.
But eventually you did have it, and actually I would love to hear you do that now.
Well, great. Why don't I just charge into it for you?
Charge into it.
I'm not the guy who cared about love and I'm not the guy cared about fortunes and such. I cared about much. Oh, look at me now. And I never knew the technique of kissing, and I never knew the thrill I could get from your touch. I never knew much. Look at me now. I'm a new man, I'm better than Casanova at his best. With a new heart and a brand new start, proud I'm busting my vest. And so I'm the guy who turned out a lover. Oh, yes, I'm the guy who laughed at those blue diamond rings. Just one of those things. Look at me now. I'm a new man, I'm better than Casanova at his best. With a new heart and a brand new start, proud I'm busting my vest. I'm a lover, so I'm the guy who turned out a lover. Oh yes, I'm the guy, laughed at that song till I cried. Here comes the bride, oh look at me now. Marion,
I'm ready. Look at me now.
It's funny, that song is so popular. I've heard so many different people do it. That, I mean, that's really a jazz standard, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's like when you get a hit tune, it's kind of like nowadays hitting the lottery.
Really. I guess so.
Because, I mean, there's some great tunes, as I recall, very vividly, some great songs that Jimmy Van Heusen played for me that never really caught on, and yet some of the other tunes did. All I know about writing tunes, you either write it in 20 minutes or it never gets written somehow.
You may have a point there, but anyway, it's a great tune, and I'd sort of like to go back a little bit and ask you how you ever got started in this racket that we're all in.
I can tell you that my greatest inspiration has always been a low bank balance. That's for sure.
Well, when you were a kid, I mean, you came from New York, didn't you?
I came from East Harlem in New York, and I quit high school after about 2 years of it, and joined a band, a neighborhood band, actually, that played at the Roseland Ballroom on trumpet.
Not bad for a first gig.
That was my first gig, really. And I decided not to go back to school after that, but one of the lucky breaks I got with that band, it was Frank Lamar and his orchestra, and one of the lucky breaks I got with that band, I was not quite 16, of course, but the piano player took a powder, and we had three trumpets, so Frank said, why don't you play piano? And I realized I was much better off playing the piano, where the taxi dance hall gals thought I was the band leader suddenly, along with the fact that I didn't have to play second trumpet under a lead trumpet player who was out of tune, you know, twice on the weekends and every other night.
Oh, God, that's awful.
Yeah, so, and then I found out in a peculiar manner about having perfect pitch, which is very helpful to you, of course.
It is,
but it's also harmful, you know.
When it's harmful, when you get an out of tune piano.
Oh, and how?
And then I don't know, I have to go and play in the key I hear it in.
Well, one of the big hang ups with playing the piano on the road with the Berrigan Band, the Dorsey Band, and Benny Goodman, etc., was, you know, sometimes we play a ballroom where the piano hadn't been played on for about 15 or 20 years.
Good
of
God.
Course, it was painted white. It looked great, except that the keys were all messed up, and I used to go around with 10 Band-Aids on my fingers, and if I was lucky, it would be a half a tone too low where I could transpose into the keys that the band was playing in.
Yeah.
But if it was a quarter tone off,
oh, man.
I was a lucky guy because then I could go and hit the roller coaster all night long.
Oh, man.
So I became a really champ roller coaster specialist.
Well, you know, we could talk about this stuff, and we will, but let's play something first.
Okay.
What have you got in your head?
Well, I was thinking about doing a medley of Manhattan and California, Here I Come. That kind of covers us.
That's good.
Thank you.
seems to me you used to do some of those things, like California, Here I Come, at the Embers, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, back in Manhattan, and that was a strange gig, as you recall, and you played there too, of course. But we opened the joint for 16 weeks, and it was Art Tatum.
I remember that. I would come in there to hear you.
And it was Art Tatum and my quartet. And I had Buck Clayton, Joe Jones, and Mill Hinton. And I felt very secure with the cats. And I always considered Art Tatum's piano playing, instead of it being a challenge, I mean, there was no way to deal with that. I always thought Art Tatum was like a surgeon or whatever, a good medical doctor, and I was in the law practice.
Well, at least you got out
of the way.
You got to hear him every night.
I sure did. And my wife Fran and Art became great buddies. I mean, he'd always hang around for my last set with the group, and he'd always request Squeeze Me, the Duke Ellington tune.
Oh, good tune.
And he'd be over there knocking those VOs and beer chasers down. I mean, I don't know how he handled the gig. With us doing four or five shows a night, I hardly remember my last show. You know, I had a cab driver on a retainer to make sure I got home. He'd carry me out of there, you know.
Oh, my God.
But one night, I got to tell you, Louis Armstrong showed up, and he always carried his mouthpiece in a little leather cachet. And of all people to be in the joint that night, it was Vladimir Horowitz, who came in to hear Tatum, of course. And he was with Lenny Lyons, who was a columnist with the
Journal American
or whatever, yeah, way back then. And Louis sat in with us. And
how
so he
exciting.
Used Buck's horn.
What a thrill.
And then Louis and I went over to say hello to Vladimir, the genius guy.
Did he say anything?
Yes, he was delighted to meet Satch. And he said, Joey, let me ask you something. I said, what? You know, he said, is every night New Year's Eve around here? And that was his reaction to jazz music, which I thought was wonderful.
Well, it was kind of while you were in there, because when you left, you took all your people with you, and I had to go in there and follow you, which was a tough gig because, you know, you took all your people, including Tallulah Bankhead.
Oh, yeah.
And all those people that were swooning on the floor loved your music.
Well, you know, being there was a wonderful experience. I got to know Jason Robards so well, and Bob Considine and Robert Ruach. You remember all those cats. And I got a big kick because in moving to a new house, the garage loaded with books and all kinds of stuff. And I ran into a book recently, just a couple of days ago, which was a book that Bob Considine wrote about Tut Shaw.
Oh, goodness.
And in the flyleaf, he said to Joe Bushkin, who's done as much for the piano as Tut did for the saloon.
Boy,
and he
what
said
a great
affectionately,
dedication.
Bob Considine, London, 1970. Isn't that a kick?
How nice.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I just loved Bob, and he was a wonderful writer, of course.
Well, we'll do more talk and music in a minute, but first I want to let you know that my guest is Joe Bushkin. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. What I think I'll try some tune for you, try something. I just started thinking about a Johnny Mandel tune.
Oh, well, like, Johnny Mandel was a wonderful, wonderful writer. He and Billy Byers, well, along naturally with Nelson Riddle, they were really, and of course Glenn Osser, who did all the Mood albums with me.
Well, he's still doing it, Johnny Mandel. I mean, God, he's
absolutely
better than ever.
And you know, Johnny Mandel's uncle was a great buddy of Eddie Condon, so he must have been a heavy drinker for sure.
I would say so. Well, all right, here goes. I'm going to play Emily. How's that?
That's one of my favorites. Marion, that was lovely. And it made me think of Big Spider Beck and In a Mist. And, you know, that was a real inspiration to me about that kind of playing. It made me listen to McDowell and some of the Debussy pieces.
It's funny you bring that up because those were my favorite things. And, of course, it's funny I learned Bix's thing, In a Mist, off of 78 in England.
Wow.
I didn't realize that it was around that long. But, of course, as you know, my husband Jimmy idolized Bix. And so I learned all those tunes, singing the blues, Davenport blues.
Wow.
And they have the great harmony.
Yeah, well, singing the blues is very special. And Eddie Condon with the four-string guitar had such a terrific command of the chord changes. As a matter of fact, when Johnny DeVries came by the Famous Door when I was with Berrigan and Eddie Condon, he picked up the sheet music of I Can't Get Started With You, which Bob Hope did a tap dance with I Can't Get Started.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, and it was the Ziegfeld Follies of 36. And, I mean, Johnny, he just recognized what a wonderful ballad it would be. And he brought the sheet music in, and it was Eddie Condon who set up all the chord changes for Bunny Berrigan, which became a great standard.
Really?
And he did the chord changes on the bridge leading to the last chorus, and Bunny just played it. We hadn't seen the show. Bunny had no idea it was done as a tap dance routine. He just played it as a beautiful ballad.
I never heard that it was done as a tap dance.
And that's how it happened.
Goodness, that's wild. But then you eventually did play at Eddie Condon's club, didn't you?
No, I never played at Eddie's. As a matter of fact, after the Dorsey Band, I was with him 40 and 41. In January of 42, I enlisted in the Army Air Corps a day before I was drafted upon some very, very good advice from Manny Klein, the great trumpet player's wife. You know, you remember her nickname was Dopey, and she was wonderful. And I wondered why I hadn't been drafted up till that point. And I was at a New Year's Eve party at Lana Turner's, who was a big fan of the Dorsey Band. And she was there with Manny and said, "By the way, Joe, I got to tell you, I'm in charge of A to H at the Draft Board 202 in the Pantages building. And I've been putting your name on the bottom of the pile every time I see it. And you are now the pile, and you're going to be drafted on the 21st of January. That's like 3 weeks from that New Year's Eve party. We're at the Hollywood Palladium at the time.
Decided not to wait.
Well, no, the reason I did that is I knew that I would need a cop-out at some point and be able to shout, "I volunteered for this," and get away from, you know, get away with being AWOL, as they say.
You know. Did you play?
Well, I went out to Marshfield, and they threw me into basic training, of course. And there was a Major Mabbitt. I don't know why I remember all his names, but I just do. And he was in charge of the basic training group, and he knew about me being with Tommy Dorsey's band. He says, "What are you doing here? You should be with the Marshfield band." And so I played trumpet with the Marshfield Band. It was a nice, small group of about 90 guys. And I was about the 14th trumpet player, I guess. And I just wouldn't play the piano unless they laid a few stripes on me, you know, so I can get $8 more a month, or at least if you're a staff sergeant, you were allowed to live off the post.
You know, we've got to play something. I'm fascinated by everything that you're telling me, but you and I have to play. Next thing up is going to be a duet. They can't take that away from me.
Right. That's another one of those great old standards.
But make it long. I like to hear you play. Don't just take one chorus.
Okay, well, we'll just hang in there, baby.
Yeah, let's hang in there. Okay. All right. So
we're in the key of E flat in case of a tie.
All right, you start it. that was nice. All these years, you've just got a special way of playing. People can always tell it's Joe Bushkin playing.
How did you get that? It's strange that you mentioned that, because I've had a lot of people tell me they can always tell my playing.
Absolutely. It's certain chords and the little things you do with your right hand, like little triplets.
I can account for that because I never really studied very much.
Well, it evidently just became a natural thing.
I guess so, really. And playing the trumpet was a most natural thing for me. And I love playing the horn so much because of being able to sight read those single notes. It sure makes a difference. And also the fact that it's more like a voice.
Sure.
You know, when I was playing trumpet at March Field, and the 4th Air Corps Band would play the funeral march, and the CEO, the colonel of the camp, said, "I don't want to hear that anymore. Just have one trumpet player at a time do taps, and that's where it's at." And I got the first assignment, and it wrecked the weekend for me, and I wound up at Forest Lawn and sat in a GI truck with 6 MPs who were going to do the gun salute. We got there in time, and it turns out that the train was late and all the relatives were there. And the chaplain said, "Look, fellows, you know, it's around noon, and the train isn't due until around 6 o'clock, so take off and be back here at 6. And I called a cab and went into town, and I asked the cab driver where I could pick up a jug, and he said, and he took me to some boarding house, and I got a pint of Four Roses or something. And I took the cab back to Forest Lawn, and the body hadn't arrived yet, luckily.
This is getting funnier.
And the chaplain suggested I comb up and straighten out a bit, and threw a lot of cold water on me. And we did our scene with the 3 MPs on either side of me, and finally the coffin was there, and we marched up to the gravesite. And I'm supposed to play taps and do an about face, of course, and wait for the gun salute and then march off with the MPs. And I got kind of brave and hit a high C at the end of taps and saw a few stars. And when I did the about face, I tripped and fell right into the grave on top of the coffin.
Oh,
that took
God.
Care of me.
Oh, God, that's
And when
funny.
I got back to Marsh Field, the band leader said, "Well, you're being shipped out," and they sent me to Douglas, Arizona. And I was lucky in Douglas, the CEO of an A-20 squadron, which were the cadets that graduated every 6 weeks to be P-38 pilots. He was a big Tommy Dorsey fan. He said, "Well, you're our new band leader. Go to Santa Ana and get a band." So I got about 50 guys together who were in a high school band together. They were all friends. And I also chose a couple of cats who couldn't play at all so that they can lug those big tubas around, you know, and make the band look good. And that was a whole start of one of my great Army experiences.
Well,
I really enjoyed being in the Army. I hate to admit it, because at least we weren't on the road. I slept in the same tent every night.
You know, this is all very interesting, and I'm dying to hear more. But first, I want to remind the folks that my guest is Joe Bushkin. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, which is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano and Organ Company, manufacturers of the pianos heard on Piano Jazz.
Singer-pianist Joe Bushkin played with great artists like Eddie Condon, Louis Armstrong, Benny Goodman, and Bing Crosby. And you'll hear him play with Marian McPartland on Gershwin's They Can't Take That Away From Me. And he'll sing and play his own tune, Oh Look At Me Now. That's Joe Bushkin on the next Piano Jazz from NPR Music.
Tell me about the song you wrote for Bing.
Oh, that's very basic. I flew into L.A. from Douglas, Arizona with one of the A-20 pilots, and I ran into Sinatra at the Brown Derby, and he said, "Come on back and say hello to some of the guys in the band." He was doing the old gold show then, a radio show, and there were about a half a dozen guys who were in the old Tommy Dorsey band. And I was hanging out with Frank in his dressing room. He had a complete bar going. And I was having a great time. And Frank said, "Have you been writing any tunes?" I said, "Yeah, well, I wrote a march for my band in Douglas." And he said, "Well, does it have a lyric?" And I said, "Well, oddly enough, Johnny DeVries, my guy, sent me a 6-page letter with a lot of gags in it. And I chose some phrases out of it and made a lyric out of the tune. And I played it for him. And Frank said, "I mean, what's it called?" I said, "Well, it's There'll Be a Hot Time in the Town of Berlin." He said, "Well, gee, I wish I could record it, but I'll publish it. And I know we can get it to Bing, who's recording next week." And he was going to record with the Andrews Sisters. And I found out later that Bing never even looked at the lead sheet that I wrote out in pencil. And he was going to do it one way or another. And because he said, "I know that Joe could use a few bucks in with a royalty of some kind being in the service." Anyway, this is the tune.
I'd love to hear it.
Great.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin. The Yanks go marching in. I want to be their boy and spread some joy when they take old Berlin. There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Brooklyn boys begin to take the joint apart and tear it down when they take old Berlin. I'm gonna grab a Frau and show her how we paint the town back in Kokomo. Take a hike through Hitler's Reich and change that Harlem to what you know, Joe. Hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. Oh, how you gonna keep them happy down on the farm after they've taken Berlin? Show how we paint the town back in Michigan. Take a hike through Hitler's Reich and change that Heil to gimme some skin. Hot time in the town of Berlin. The Yanks go marching in. Oh, how you gonna keep 'em happy down on the farm after they've taken Berlin? Sweet Hitler, after they've taken Berlin. Gabby Goebbels, after they've taken Berlin.
So Bing actually did do that tune.
Oh, he did. As a matter of fact, when I got the lead sheet through Ben Barton, who ran Sinatra's publishing company or whatever, and Vic Schoen did an arrangement of it with the Andrews Sisters and Bing. And after Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, that became the biggest World War II song.
I'd really love to hear you play another pretty tune. Like, how about I've Got a Crush on You?
Oh, yeah. Well, I would like to, you know, I recorded all of the Gershwin albums and Rodgers and Hart, Cole Porter with Lee Wiley, one of our favorites. And I'd like to play the verse. As a matter of fact,
that.
I will play the verse first.
Thank you. hearing the verse is very rare. People seem to have forgotten about verses. They don't do them very often anymore.
As a matter of fact, one of the biggest kicks that I get in writing songs is writing a verse to the chorus, you know. It's kind of like saying, how do you do?
It is, isn't it? It's setting the song up.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, back in 36, Hoagy Carmichael was getting married, and he got Bunny Berrigan in the band to play his wedding. It was a wonderful party, and I got to meet George Gershwin at that party.
That's a thrill, I'm sure.
And that was just fantastic. And he kind of hung around the band. He said, I never heard my tunes played like that. And he just got a charge out of us. And then, of course, Hoagy's dad was in Indiana, in Bloomington, where he came from. And he wasn't feeling well enough to fly into New York for the wedding ceremony. And they call him on the phone and put the phone by the piano. And Hoagy's mother played Maple Street Rag and a whole bunch of great stride tunes, and she was a tremendous piano player. She knocked everybody out.
You know, Hoagy used to play and play and play until he got too loaded to play. He would say, and then I wrote, and then I wrote.
Oh, of course. Well, Jimmy Van Heusen always said to me, man, whenever you make an appearance, be sure and do the then I wrote bit. It works, you know. All of the good songwriters basically are song pluggers, and that's how they got all their tunes recorded by everyone.
Well, didn't Jimmy Van Heusen write Like Someone in Love?
I think you must be reading my mind right now.
Really?
And he sure did.
That's one we should play. I just love right. that tune.
If you love that tune, Marion, and as long as I'm in town sitting next to you here, let's do it.
And as long as you play as good as you do, we certainly could make a go of this one.
All right. Thank you.
that was kind of a crafty little arrangement with all those figures that you did at the beginning.
Oh, well, that's just going back to the blues, baby.
Well, it was really fun, and we've got more music to come, but right now I want to remind our listeners that my guest is Joe Bushkin. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz. You know, since we've been talking about Jimmy Van Heusen and since we just played one of his tunes, it'd be kind of nice to do Here's That Rainy Day. I would really love to play that for you.
I would love to hear you play it, John.
I shall do it.
Thank you.
Well, Marion, I got to tell you, here's that rainy day. It was so beautiful.
Thank you.
And I got to tell you, I'm really enjoying being with you, Marion.
Well, it's just great to have you here. And I think we should wind up with sort of a rouser, like Hallelujah.
Great. Shall I say? Roll into it for you?
Roll into it for me. Wonderful, Joe.
Okay.
Such a kick.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and her guest, Joe Bushkin, a program which originally aired in 1998. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer David Glover, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Audrey Shiflett, executive producer Tom Clark. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for the original production of this episode was provided by the Baldwin Piano Company, Borders Books and Music, and the Joseph Drown Foundation. Support for the digital conversion was provided by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org, and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.